Many political experts thought that Jeb would be the son of George H.W. Bush to run for president. After George W.'s election, there was speculation Jeb would try to succeed his brother in the White House. Jeb is the Bush that my guest S.V. Date covered for 8 years, the 2 terms that Jeb was governor of Florida. He was elected in 1998 and reelected in 2002. Date has written a new book about the former governor and what it was like to cover him, called Jeb, America's Next Bush. Date is the Tallahassee bureau chief of the Palm Beach Post. His investigative reports on Bush won awards from the Florida Press Corps, the Florida Society of Newspaper Editors, and the National Education Writers Association. S.V. Date, welcome back to Fresh Air. Now, my impression is that when you gave the book its title, Jeb, America's Next Bush, that you thought he was going to run for president. Do you still think so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's America's next Bush. It didn't say when he'll be the next Bush. But I'm firmly convinced that in his soul, he has to run for president of the United States.
Are you expecting him to be a vice presidential candidate somewhere along the line?
Actually, that's something that I've changed my opinion on years ago. 7 or 8 years ago, I would have thought that would have been very silly, given Jeb Bush's personality. To think of him as a vice anything, it just seemed a little bit absurd. But now, given where we are, given where his brother is in the polls, I think actually that would be a very good fit for Jeb, because that allows him to introduce himself to the national press at first and then to the whole country in a more non-threatening way, I think, than running for president himself. And then people can see that in many ways he is not his brother, and that, I believe, is to his good right now.
What would you say is Jeb Bush's place within the National Republican Party now?
He is the one who I think everyone knows is still a national player and is biding his time until the conditions are right for him to run. Now, whether that's coming up soon or it's going to wait a little while, that remains to be seen. But there are so many in the conservative wing of the Republican Party who are looking around right now and not really seeing anybody who they really like that much, but seeing Jeb and just kind of looking wistfully at him and thinking, you know, if only you could run, if only this could be Jeb's year.
In 2000, during the Florida recount, Jeb Bush recused himself in having any official role in the recount because it's a conflict of interest. I mean, after all, it was his brother's election that was at stake here. But you say after he officially recused himself, he unofficially still was active in his brother's campaign. What did he do in a more unofficial capacity?
In Tallahassee, after the lawsuits got going, it became clear to the legislature that they felt they needed to act to make sure that George W. was going to win that election. It was a dominantly Republican legislature. So they were going to pass a law that gave the Florida's electoral votes to George W. Bush, irrespective of what the vote count could have been after recounts, et cetera. And Governor Bush was very much involved in the behind-the-scenes negotiating of how that would happen. You know, at first it was a question, well, maybe we just can do a resolution that doesn't need the governor's signature, or maybe it doesn't have to be a law, and they were quite close to passing that when the U.S. Supreme Court decided the matter.
When the governor recused himself, was that meant to cover unofficial capacity as well as official capacity?
In fact, I believe he actually said, I recused myself from being, for my role as the governor, but I'm not going to recuse myself for being his brother, or words to that effect. And that was pretty clear that he would know he was not on the technically on the canvassing commission or whatever the group is that does that at the end, but he was still there, and the emails and the phone logs afterward proved it.
Now, one of Governor Bush's major programs was a school voucher program. You investigated that program. What obstacle did you run into in investigating it?
We ran into any number of obstacles, from a refusal of the people within the education department to tell us how much money was involved, where it was going, which schools were involved, how many students. Just it ran the gamut of stuff they just weren't telling us. And it was public money in most of these instances, and tax credit money in other instances. It was really phenomenal because of the level of scrutiny the public schools were undergoing, that you'd have all this money, $100 million plus per year, going into private schools, religious schools, most of them, religious schools that in many cases proselytize children into their particular religion. And we, the people of Florida and the press, had no idea how this money was being spent or what kind of instruction they were getting or what kind of scores or how well they were doing. And they did everything they could to make it impossible for us to find out the answers to these questions.
Well, specifically, you say that there were documents that you thought should have been public documents that were withheld from the press. What were those documents?
Well, for example, the lists of schools that participate in the programs. Initially, we were told, well, we didn't really have the lists, or we couldn't give them to you. And after some period of time, they generated some lists. They were not very accurate. Ultimately, we finally got what we were looking for, not from the governor's office, but from the Florida House of Representatives, where it had turned out the governor's office had given them exactly what we were looking for, exactly what we were looking for weeks earlier. And to me, that spoke volumes, that we will give them to our allies, the people who we want them, who want to know, and we won't give them to people who we think are inimical to our interests.
So once this information was leaked to you by somebody in the state legislature, what did you learn from it, and what kind of story did you publish?
The stories were amazing because on that list were the school codes, in addition to the number of students involved in each of the programs. So by then, we'd already built a table. We were able to cross-link the two and showed that, in, for example, the voucher program for children with disabilities, 75% of the schools taking part in that program had no teachers who were qualified to teach disabled children. We found that 80% of the kids almost were getting vouchers to religious schools when, of course, the state was pretty clear in its constitution about how that was supposed to work. There were schools that were created in a very short period of time to take advantage of vouchers. And when we went to investigate them, some of them we couldn't really find. The state had problems finding them. Sometimes there were no more than mail drops, really, to accept checks.
So you found that a lot of the vouchers were going towards religious schools, although the state constitution says that public money shouldn't go toward religious institutions. So the voucher program was eventually challenged in the Supreme Court. What was the result of that challenge? The state Supreme Court.
Right. The one voucher program that was challenged, there are two others that still stay on the books. The one that was challenged was struck down, and the wording in that ruling makes it likely that the other two are going to be struck down as well when they are challenged. That's a matter of when, really, not if.
Now, you said that the governor's office tried to prevent other papers and to prevent the Associated Press from picking up on the voucher story that you had written. How?
Well, they would call the other papers in the morning and say, hey, you know, you guys aren't planning to do anything with that voucher thing, are you? Or if you are, we'd like to, like, have our input into it. That's a very difficult story to do when it involves a data set that you haven't spent months working on. So it was not likely that they were going to do it anyway. But we know from talking to other reporters that they made an effort to kind of contain the damage, so to speak, to the readership of the Palm Beach Post and limit it there.
If everything that you're saying is true, can't you kind of say, well, you know, Jeb Bush is really successful at managing information, and isn't that what every politician wants to do?
Oh, absolutely. I do think Jeb Bush is very successful at managing information, and it might be what many politicians want to do. I don't think it's good for newspapers, and I know it's not good for newspapers' readers for them to be that successful. That's why we have open records laws in Florida. That's why we have a Freedom of Information Act at the federal level.
You were saying that during Governor Jeb Bush's 8-year tenure, it was difficult to get access to him much of the time, and also difficult to get access to documents. There was a bunch of documents that you were trying to get access to, and I believe other newspapers were too, and a group of newspapers in Florida were considering suing under the state's open records law. But instead of suing, the papers made a deal with the governor's office. You say you regret the deal. What were the papers you wanted, and what was the deal that you made?
Right. Well, this would have been actually the first set of documents that Jeb Bush created as a public official. There were the paperwork, all the application forms and the emails and so forth from his transition team. After he'd won, before he'd taken office, he was giving state money, state office space, state equipment, and state employees to help him hire people and run background checks and so forth. And I wanted, other people in the Tallahassee Press Corps wanted this information. And Governor-elect Bush said, well, you know, we don't really think these materials are public under the state open records law because it doesn't really speak to that. And, you know, philosophically, we were just amazed. I mean, here all this stuff is being funded by taxpayer money. How could you possibly interpret that it wouldn't be publicly available material? So I and others suggested that we sue the governor-elect and just so that we started out understanding where we were and what we thought we had a right to. And in the end, the day before the inauguration, in fact, the governor's people said, look, we'll give you what you want, but we're not going to admit that these things are public. And our editors were fine with it because, after all, after he's governor, there's no question then that anything he does is public. And so what did it matter? Well, I thought it mattered because it was the principle of the thing. And in the end, I think I was right because it showed the governor where we were, where we, the press, were, that if it's going to cost money and it involved suing someone in high office, probably we weren't going to do it. And that was the wrong message of weakness to send, I think. And in the end, we all paid for that.
S.V. Date, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Tara. It was my pleasure.
S.V. Date is the author of America's Next Bush. He's the Tallahassee bureau chief for the Palm Beach Post.